Hello and welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. Pete and I are having a walk along the canal, as we often do when we record these podcasts, and we're going to continue with our Lao Tzu series. So this is episode 11, and we're going to be going through chapters 16 and 17 of the Tao Te Ching. The reason sometimes we bring chapters together is because if they do deal with similar sorts of ideas. So we thought these two would work quite well as a pair today. So what we're going to do is Pete's going to read out one, and then we're going to have a chat about it, and then read out the next one, and we'll have a little talk about that.
Chapter 16. The sage rules from the purest motives, relying wholly on quiet and inner peace. He watches the seasons rise and fall, and if he knows how things grow, he knows they are fed by their roots, and they return to their roots to grow and flower and flow. Everything must have its roots, and the tendrils work quietly underground. This quiet feeding is the way of nature. If you understand Chang, this principle of nurturing, you can understand everything. Not understanding it will lead you to disaster. If a sage knows this, he can rule, and he will do so with patience and justice. Any man can become wise in this, and he can walk the way of heaven. And if you walk that way, you will be royal in the mastery. Life can end in pain, but if you live like this, under the Tao, you will fill your days with breath.
This is dealing again with a similar, or definitely related, subject to what was in our last podcast, where he's talking about governing societies and rulers and...
Yeah.
Then the last one, he was describing them as subtle as sorcerers and crossing icy swollen river with great care and caution, wasn't he? As a method of ruling.
Yeah.
And now he is discussing the ways in which a sage, or what he would consider a sage, would rule, relying wholly on quiet and inner peace. The purest motives, watching the rise and fall of the seasons. So here we have a metaphor which is very plant-based. Roots,
yes.
Flower.
Yeah. Yeah.
And talking about water and the flow.
Indeed. So once again we've got the idea of a sagacious ruler as being an ideal. And we are in the realm of utopian speculation and utopian elaboration of how Lao Tzu would like society to be. Bear in mind that Lao Tzu's talking in the time of the Warring States, which was a period of very, very great chaos and suffering. Mm. And he was pondering how things could be done a bit better.
Yeah.
And his idea was that, well, if the ruler was, as he put it, under the Tao, or, if you like, completely aligned with the Tao, and then people would flourish and society would be peaceful. So, it is a bit different from the previous one, because he's describing what the sagacious ruler would be like. From a slightly different angle, and as Anna said, he's drawing on a metaphor of growth and decay, and of roots, branches and flowers, of growth, also of cycles in nature, the seasons, the coming and going of the seasons. And he's suggesting that the sage has a deep understanding of the processes of nature through a contemplative discipline, which is one of simple quietness. And we've said this before, it's in that simple quietness that there is a sensitivity comes to the organism and to consciousness and to our understanding. And in that state, we are, according to Lao Tzu, able to discern the deeper patterns of flow and change and seasonal movement and the patterns of growth and decay in plant life, which underpin everything. So remember, you know, this, we mentioned it before, this is a vision of a cosmos in movement. So the Taoist effort is to understand those movements, understand those cycles, to see the patterns. And Lao Tzu is putting it to us that someone who can do that, because they're accomplished in this quietest meditation, will also be able to look after a society. Because after all, a society is an efflorescence of nature, just like everything else. So that's the basic idea that he's putting forward. And then he brings us to another idea, which is related, and that's the idea of nurturing. How does he put it? Everything must have its roots, and the tendrils work quietly underground. This quiet feeding is the way of nature. Notice that, quiet feeding. If you understand the principle of nurturing, you can understand everything. So he sees the sage actually like nurturing the society. He looks after it by nurturing, not by passing laws, not by being imperious or authoritarian, but by nurturing, in the same way that nature nurtures plants through the action of the roots. And he's recommended in meditation returning to the roots, finding the very rhizomes where the nurturing is made possible through those tendrils into the earth. And again, this is a very much an earthy style of contemplation. It's very much focused on the earth and on natural processes and on biological processes and on these cycles of growth and decay and seasonal fluctuation. So this is, I mean, it sounds great. You know, a society should be nurtured by those who find that they have responsibility for it, rather than ruled with a heavy hand. Yeah. And so, I mean, remember, this is utopian speculation, and it's a very far cry from anything that we know or that exists anywhere in the present day. Maybe in some kind of far off, undiscovered corner of the Amazon rainforest. Maybe there might be a tribe doing some stuff like this, but mostly the way our societies are governed, ruled, controlled is a very, very far cry from this. And he says, any man can become wise in this, and he can walk the way of heaven. And if you walk that way, you'll be royal in the mastery. Life can end in pain, but if you live like this under the Tao, you will fill your days with breath. So it's also advantageous for the individual. And he says, any man can do it. This is a key thing, you know. He's not propagating a caste system whereby there's some ruling caste which must provide the rulers. He's actually saying any man, this is open to anybody. It can apply to the individual whether they find themselves with the responsibility of nurturing the society or not. And as he says, you know, your days, you will fill your days with breath. What it actually means then is like the easeful way in which breath comes and goes when one is easeful within existence. And even if one carries responsibilities but is able to carry on being easeful, and the breath just comes and goes without any friction. There's no anxious grasping for the breath or fraught hanging on to the breath. And this is what he means by your days will be filled with breath. So your days will be filled with ease. If you just catch a glimpse of what he's talking about. And what he's talking about is the actual the power of quiet and inner peace, and how that can endow a person with the ability to nurture, and if not a country, that those around them. All right, going to look at the next one. This is chapter 17. It's quite short. And Lao Tzu moves on from a consideration of the sagacious ruler to a consideration of government itself. Chapter 17. The highest form of government is what people hardly even realise is there. Next is that of the sage, who is seen and loved and respected. Next down is the dictatorship that thrives on oppression and terror. And the last is that of those who lie and end up despised and rejected. The sage says little and does not tie the people down. And the people stay happy, believing that what happens, happens naturally. And this is a very good polemic for political anarchism of the Kropotkin style. And in fact, some anarchist thinkers do actually really like Lao Tzu. Now, the idea of like one person ruling a society is one that, I mean, I love Taoism, but I couldn't go along with that idea, however benevolent was the ruler, you know. But actually, if you look, the highest form of government is one that people hardly even realise is there. It's actually basically more or less no government, and things just going along, ticking over. And well, of course, we don't have anything like that in any of the large modern societies. I think historically, governments like that have existed, which are more or less certain egalitarian tribal arrangements, which have been known and documented, in which there isn't really much need for government. There might be, if there's an emergency, a sort of a gathering and a group decision-making process. That would be this kind of thing. And notice that the next style of government is one in which there is a ruler or a chief, but it's a sagacious person. It's the sage who is rooted in the wisdom that comes from this quietest Taoist meditation, which is one of finding oneself in accord with the cycles and the growth and the decay and the nurturing, which is existence, which is nature. And I'll refer you to my previous podcast of a few weeks ago on nature, so you can see how we need to be a little bit nuanced in our understanding of the term nature. But anyway, his next one is the rule by the sage. You know, it's not the top one. That's the one that you would have if you couldn't actually manage the pure anarchism. But after that, you've got a dictatorship. Still like one ruler, but not somebody like the Taoist sage, who does it all with a very light touch, by nurturing and care, but by power, by oppression and terror. And of course, this is very common in the modern world, either dictatorships of one or two, or you know, oligopolies, where there's a group that acts in an oppressive and state terrorist manner. This is actually, I would think, is the commonest form of governance on the earth at the moment, to be honest with you. And then the last is that of those who lie and end up despised and rejected.
Well, we're seeing it,
you know, and we're seeing it now, and all.
Actually, that seems to be the top form of government, doesn't it, for the world?
Well, it's midway, but we've got quite a lot of dictatorships, but we've got where it's very hard to maintain a dictatorship. Society has come to such a place that the people are fairly difficult to subjugate, for various reasons of education and all the rest of it. That you get propaganda. He's talking about lies, you know. Government by propaganda, by controlling the information that circulates throughout a society, and as a determining effect on people's behaviour. Was that? I mean, it's very common, and you'll hear me going on about this endlessly in these podcasts, is the way in which populations are controlled through the control of information, of which money is one type.
Yeah.
So, actually, this is kind of really, really, this categorisation of government styles, this is quite serviceable now. You know. Anyway, fill out too. I think the way this is structured, the highest form of government isn't sort of given to us except very occasionally, perhaps. But the sagacious, benevolent dictatorship, as opposed to oppressive dictatorship, that's his utopian dream. Is the one that he's putting forward here or recommending, and because he goes on to say, well, the sage says little, does not tie the people down. So again, there's not a great amount of dictatorship in how people should behave, as opposed to Confucianism, you know, which is very very detailed in what people are supposed to do. It's kind of a bit of a laissez-faire anarchist. Yeah. And the sage says very little. So there isn't... Again, it's more about nurturing than it is about propaganda and controlling the information. He doesn't want to fall into what seems to be the most despicable form of government, which is the government based on lies and fake news and alternative facts and post-truth.
Yeah.
You know. And then this is his recipe for a happy society. He says... And the people stay happy, believing that what happens naturally. But again, you see, this is a guy who's claiming that you can derive wisdom by studying nature, the natural cycles, birth, growth, death, decay. Yeah, and both of these chapters really emphasise that. It's actually the study of nature itself that becomes the source of wisdom. But it's the study of nature with a contemplative mind, which I would put to you is a sensitive mind that's able to be alert to all the nuances of the changes and processes. And it's kind of scientific, really, and it's no accident that Taoism gave rise to ancient Chinese science, which was far in advance of the rest of the world. They were first people to get paper, gunpowder, silk, to build irrigation systems, huge ones, and so on. Because Taoism as a religious element in the society actually encouraged the contemplation of nature, the study of nature. And that was a kind of a scientific and mystical idea all in one place. And it is kind of marvellous for that, I would say. And yeah, of course we live in a technological, complex society which is very very frenetic in its activity because it's got motorised transport, powered flight,
and information can move very fast.
Yeah,
faster than ever.
Incredible speed of information movement. Incredible speed of propaganda movement, by the same token.
Yes, unfortunately.
You know, a huge population, of course, like weapons, immense power for warfare, and it's all kind of a bit different. But even in Lao Tzu's day, he's fantasizing, he's dreaming of a utopian possibility. That has got peace right at its core, you know, and it's to do with not overburdening people, not oppressing people, nurturing people. And maybe the suggestion is, since every man can become a sage, that we should all contemplate nature as a desideratum, so that we can understand the processes, and out of that to be effective nurturers of those around us. Then I would suggest that the people would stay happy. And they would see that what happens is happening naturally, in other words, in line with these cycles, which they would know about because they were tuned into themselves.
I suppose that was my issue with the last world. Line, is because you're using a different word there. In the actual text here, it says, and the people stay happy believing that what happens, happens naturally. Yeah. Rather, you said that they know that what happens is happening naturally. Yeah. But there, it kind of looks like they're being hoodwinked just a little bit. They believe it.
Yeah. Well,
you know, they believe what they're told.
I do think there is...
That's probably not what he means.
Yeah.
When I looked at that line, that sprang into my mind.
Yeah, I mean, he does say elsewhere that when people become too sophisticated, that the society becomes unhappy. You know, as a part of his kind of utopian thing is that people are simple. You know. Mm. And it's hard for us to go along with that because we've long embarked on projects of educating the entire population of all countries. I mean, at least, as a desideratum, there's no thinking people in the world that don't want that. And it's coming from a rather, well, obviously a vastly different era. And personally, I can't go along with it, but I can see that that if we do understand the processes of existence through this contemplative method of understanding, that the world would be a happier place, and we would find our contentment as something intrinsic to us, as opposed to something we've got to struggle for, just by chilling a bit. You know, so I mean, there is a lesson for us here. At the same time, as you know, we have to recognise that we're in our own peculiar circumstances, and we have our own peculiar context.
Okay, I hope that was interesting for you all. Coming to the end of our walk now, so we will sign off and we will speak to you soon.